personal emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Light removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals your body needs. The Berkey Light is so powerful it can purify raw, untreated water from remote lake streams and stagnant ponds. The Berkey Light is transparent and glows in the dark with its rechargeable LED lighting system, so it can be used as a night light or camp light.
Get the Berkey Light Purifier for only $279. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. Joel, how are you today? Joel, are you there? Well, I don't know what's going on. Let's try one more time. Joel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you go right ahead.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the government hit list today, and are you on it?
All right, fine. I've been noticing some references to that on your webpage of World Affairs Brief. So tell us a little bit about this hit list. What do we know about it? How are they compiling it? And how could we find if we're on it?
Well, there's actually very little that we know about it, other than the fact that investigative reporter Christopher Ketchum, writing for a report called Radar and also for Harper's Magazine, indicates that the federal government's secret continuity and governance program is much more than just a contingency plan to provide safe havens for government officials during a national crisis, as it's advertised. He somehow got access to about half a dozen former government officials with direct knowledge of the program, and he was left with the distinct impression that it was also about using a national emergency to justify rounding up potential dissidents to increase government power. And here's his quote: according to senior government officials, there exists a database on Americans who, often for the slightest and most trivial reasons, are considered unfriendly and who in a time of panic might be incarcerated. The database can identify and locate perceived enemies of the state almost instantaneously. That means that it's updated very frequently once you get on that database. Scott Horton, Ketchum's colleague at Harper, said Ketchum and other sources tell me that the database is sometimes referred to by the code name Main Core. And it's also known as the Red List by certain other whistleblowers that have come out, and one knowledgeable source claims that 8 million Americans are now listed on Main Core as potential suspects. Now, I believe that there are sublists within this database to focus on patriots who hold extreme beliefs, as the government thinks, about the virtues of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. As I mentioned in last week's brief, the New Mexico State Police were caught listening to talk radio for right-wing patriots and taking names and putting them on lists. And so the federal government may well have enlisted the help of like-minded people within state police agencies as well. We know that they employ the services of the Southern Poverty Law Conference, a radical leftist organization which has been hired to the tune of millions of dollars to whip up these kind of nightmare scenarios and give presentations to state police forces around the country under the name of fighting domestic terrorism. So the story continues to go on. It's Ketchum says that this was part of what James Comey talked about in his dramatic disclosures about the nighttime visit that Alberto Gonzalez and Andrew Card paid on hospitalized John Ashcroft. They whipped out these papers and pressed him to sign them, and he would not.
All right, well, there really are people who want an authoritarian society in our country. There are people who have an entirely different worldview, and I think it's so vitally important people understand that they have an entirely a different philosophy. They don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in freedom. They believe in power. And, of course, they will go to any end to maintain that power. And the tragedy is, of course, the Republican Party, which at one time was in favor of limited government, seems to become the party of the tyrant. And we'll be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief, and we're talking about the fact that the government has a hit list. They have a list of people who listen to talk radio, who listen to conservative radio, who have expressed views that support the Constitution. And, of course, that's one of the worst things you can do today is to believe in the Constitution, because that almost makes you a terrorist, because you want to use the Constitution to limit the power of government, and the people who hold the reins of power in government don't like that. They want to be able to control everything, and you'll find basically the same mentality among many of the people working in Washington, D.C., and our state government today that you would have found in Nazi Germany. So pick this story up. What is this about a list, and has it actually been talked about by some people who've worked in government that this list actually exists?
Well, it does exist, and there's been several references to it over the years. This is the most comprehensive one, including the code name Main Core, and that tells you something. You know, if this is the main core of their database, it means this is the enemies list that they plan on eliminating through concentration camps or worse in a time. And of course, naturally, you know, the administration officials that he got to talk about this all had this mentality, well, of course, this is potential terrorists, these are the worst of the worst, these are the kind of people we put in Guantanamo Bay. But this isn't really the case. Ketchum finds out when he talked about who's on the list, and, you know, obviously there's no way to check if you're on a list. They won't even let you do that if you're on the terrorist no-fly list. And surely Congress, of course, is keeping an eye on this program, right? Well, not exactly. You know, when civil libertarians raised concerns about the treatment of detainees at Guantanamo and other legal black holes fashioned by the Bush administration, they're told this is, of course, designed for the worst of the worst, never for U.S. citizens. But experience has shown through Jose Padilla that such divisions are not made. They will put citizens in those conditions. Jose Padilla was kept in the brig without being charged for over 3 years, and habeas corpus was denied.
And, of course, they kept him in solitary. They destroyed his mind. They made him suddenly sort of a vegetable. And then, of course, they used all sorts of emotional appeals to get him convicted so they can keep him in prison the rest of his life. And what was his crime? He refused to become an informant for the government. He was actually asked to become an informant for the government. When he refused, that was his punishment. Life imprisonment, no hope. And of course,
he got 17 years. The judge, Marsha Cook, down in Florida, just thought the government's case was terrible and only gave him 17 years. He could be out in parole in 12.
Oh, well, let's hope so that he is. I don't necessarily like Padilla, but I think he's been totally mistreated by, certainly by the high-ranking officials who had to get a conviction. After all, he had plans, of course, to blow up our cities with dirty bombs. They had no proof of it at all. They made it up, but it doesn't really matter whether he's guilty or not. They got the conviction. And the tragedy is we've got people working for government who are much more interested in getting convictions, and the credit goes with that, rather than justice and humane treatment of people.
You know, what was actually happening is that, of course, his lawyers had taken his case to the Supreme Court, which was going to rule on the legality of holding a citizen without habeas corpus under the Military Commissions Act, which allowed for the president to designate someone a potential terrorist, and this was apparently being applied to citizens. So to stop the Supreme Court from ruling, the government capitulated And actually, you know, the issue was going whether or not they could keep holding him with, without charging him with a crime. And they had no case on him as the potential dirty bomber, as they had originally arrested him under. And so they pulled up this case concerning these phony Afghanistan documents that he signed. They have all the trappings of what looks like someone translating something very rudely from an American document. It's covered that in the World Affairs brief some time ago about how poorly the case was put together, and apparently Judge Marsha Cook, who has stood up to the government on numerous occasions, just you know, about threw the thing out of court, and the government vehemently protested that he needed to have life in prison. She said, no, I'm not going to do that.
Well, because what was so interesting, of course, is they used all these pictures of what happened on 9/11 and all the bodies and the, you know, and the,
yeah,
and the buildings in flames had nothing to do with Padilla, but they played on the emotions of the jury.
Of the jury, that's
and,
right.
And of course, the whole idea is to say all these terrible things that have happened, and they were done by Muslims, and this man's a Muslim. Now, I don't happen to like him, Padilla, but I think he's probably a disreputable individual, but they did not have a case, and yet, of course, they were able to intimidate the jury and get them to convict what I believe is an innocent man. But then, of course, why should we be surprised? They've done that so many times before. They sent people to prison who they knew were innocent to cover the crimes that government was supporting. And that is the story, of course, of the Whitey Bulger up there in Boston, sent one man to prison for 30 years for a crime that Whitey Bulger committed, but, of course, because he was working with the FBI, why, of course, they let this man just rot in prison. And nobody in government, the FBI, is ever held responsible for their crimes.
That's right. It's the same case with the torture at Guantanamo, or the abuse anyway. The debate continues. I got some emails after my article last week on Al-Hajj's release from prison. He was the photographer from Al Jazeera that was kept in Guantanamo without any proof that he was involved in terrorism at all. He's a broken man and in the hospital, and you know, he said that he'd been tortured and abused severely while at Guantanamo. And I got a letter from some Marine officer friends of mine that are still in the Marine Corps who, you know, had sent my article to some of their friends who had served in Guantanamo's officers, and they vehemently denied that there was any torture whatsoever. And one of those, whose email I've got in front of me, claims that he was in a high enough position to know. Now, my friend, who I trust, assures me that these are, you know, good people who aren't part of any government conspiracy, and so I have to tend to want to trust them, but there's just so much evidence that keeps coming out. You know, so often it happens that the dark side of government is very successful at concealing things from non-conspirators or people on the white side of the military or FBI or CIA. You know, one particular officer in a high position claimed, you know, I would have seen it if it had happened. Well, I'm just not so sure. There continues to surface numerous accounts from former detainees as well as government inspectors and FBI agents that were there that say there was abuse and severe interrogation methods going on at Gitmo, as they call it, the abbreviation for Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, especially, of course, at CIA secret prisons overseas. But, you know, here's an example of what people say. You know, Murat Kurznas told members of Congress yesterday that he was subjected to water treatment, electric shocks, and other abuse during almost 5 years he spent in U.S. custody. Of course, this puts a face to the Justice Department's Inspector General report, this big one that's really making the rounds on the Internet, detailing abuses by that were witnessed by FBI agents. These aren't then potential terrorists who are told, obviously, as part of their manual to claim terrorism or to claim torture to discredit the United States. That's what these officers were telling me. Of course, we expect these people to claim they were tortured. But, you know, I said, how else do you expect that these people come back broken and are hospitalized after they're released from Guantanamo? They can't be given, you know, proper nutrition and treatment and sleep and other. They claim sleep deprivation. They claim a lot of things that appears to be backed up by our own FBI whistleblowers. You know, he said, and this happened, of course, in a CIA secret facility in Afghanistan, but then he was sent also to Guantanamo Bay. he told Congress by video link from Germany with his lawyer by his side how he was abused when he was held at the U.S. base in Kandahar, Afghanistan, subjected to a water treatment, stuck my head into a bucket of water and punched me in the stomach so that I would inhale the water. Kurtz testified that although he had no links to Al-Qaeda, German intelligence services told U.S. officials that he was not a terrorist, but U.S. officials still did not release him from Guantanamo until 3 years later in 2006, and this seems to be the modus operandi of the U.S. commissions. They just aren't about to let people go. They keep saying, you have to prove your innocence.
Well, you know, Chris, anybody who has any question about what really has happened really should get Dr. Major General Taguba's report. It's up on the Internet, and we actually have it available here. And here is a Major General who actually investigated what happened at Abu Ghraib, denied by the government, oh, there was no mistreatment there. I heard George Tenet being interviewed, you know, it's on 60 Minutes, and Scott Pelley was asking him about the torture. Oh, the America does not torture people. And Pelley said, but what about in... George Tenet interrupts, America does not torture people. Well, if America doesn't torture people, then why in the Military Commission Act did they put a provision that nobody would be held responsible for torturing prisoners retroactively? I mean,
yeah, why give immunity if there's nothing to be guilty of?
And, of course, this reflects on everybody in the audience. Every American is responsible for what our government does, and there is not righteous outrage. You know, just imagine the screams of those helpless people. And most of them were innocent because most of them were eventually let go free without ever being tried or anything. Innocent people are being tortured by sadistic Americans. And there are sadistic Americans who go along with this. Some of them won't. Some of them will say that's wrong. But unfortunately, an awful lot of people working for the military, if they're given an order, they'll carry it out. And this really frightens me to think that Americans once would have said this was wrong and I will not do it. And now they say, well, after all, it's perfectly all right because the government has ordered, and I'm simply carrying out my military orders. And that's exactly what they did in Hitler's Germany, and it's going on in America today.
Well, Kurnaz says when he was detained in Kandahar, he was chained by his arms to the ceiling with his feet dangling and subjected to electric shocks by Americans. He also alleges U.S. interrogators tried to force him to sign papers admitting his guilt when he wasn't guilty. You know, that's shades of the KGB and what went on in the Lubyanka prison in Moscow, the famous torture prison. It was all aimed at getting a signed confession. You know, I'm just embarrassed that Americans would stoop to these kinds of tactics. And there is pressure on them to get convictions all the way up the line. In any case, the Wall Street Journal said this, the Justice Department inquiry lauded Federal Bureau of Investigation agents for refraining from harsh interrogations of terror suspects and found fault with how senior officials at the FBI handled agents' concerns about alleged abuses, meaning whistleblowers. This is what happens all the time, Dr. Stan, whether it's the DEA, the CIA, or FBI, or INS. Whenever they see abuses, violations of law, they go up the line because their immediate supervisor won't give them the time of day, and the resistance gets higher until they're finally threatened at the highest levels. This is a 370-page report by an inspector general. His jurisdiction was only to talk with FBI agents about what they have seen. It's most revealing. He did have limited jurisdiction, as I said, but in establishing the environment in which the FBI was operating, the report paints a picture of ghastly treatment of detainees by the United States on a consistent long-term basis. In the course of the investigation, the IG interviewed 450 FBI agents who were detailed to Guantanamo at one time or another. Nearly half reported witnessing or hearing about rough or aggressive treatment of detainees, primarily by military investigators. Now, let me put this in perspective. These military officers coming through my friend and another fellow Marine officer, and I was a Marine officer, vouch for the fact that there was no mistreatment of prisoners at Guantanamo. Now, here you have 450 FBI agents detailed at one time or another at Guantanamo. Half of them hear distinctly or see rough or aggressive treatment of detainees by military investigators. Now, what does that tell you? That means that fully half were were shielded from seeing it. So you see, there must be some shielding going on. There must be some hidden nature to it. So it is only logical that sincere Marine officers might be kept from it. They may not see something if 250 FBI agents were there and didn't see anything, but 250 did.
Well, I think the great tragedy, one of the great tragedies, is that sometimes military officers will lie because they want to keep their position. Military officers will do terrible things because that's how you get the head in the military. The officer who will say, I will not do it, I've resigned, that's the man I have respect for. And that's what happened to Major General Tsuguba. They were investigated. He was told if he told the truth, it would end his military career. He told the truth, he was ordered to resign. That's what happens to honest military people today in America. Well, we've lost our very soul, and I hope that people are concerned.
You know, and to another degree, Dr. Stan, what we see happening is military officers choose to look the other way or choose not to see or not to say so that they don't put their conscience in a bind. But it's the same kind of cowardice that you're talking about.
Amen to that. And of course, you know, we, for instance, you go back and you study this, what happened on the Liberty, and the highest rank in the Navy, this was, of course, the Liberty was the American ship that was attacked by the Israelis in the 67 war, and the highest officials in our government knew what had happened, and the military covered up the real truth. Many of the stories, only years later, did the truth come out, what really happened. But, of course, these were people who compromised everything because they knew if they told the truth about what happened or they didn't do what they were told and silenced the crew. And the crew was threatened. They were told they'd go to prison forever if they revealed what really happened when the Liberty was attacked. And their superior officers did that to them. They did the same thing with Pat Tillman. The people in his unit were told, don't you ever dare tell what you really happened. And to this day, we really don't know exactly what happened. Only, of course, we know that the government lied about it. But you go right ahead, Jill.
Well, you know, while we're on the subject of the Liberty, the real story really has not been told, except you know, perhaps in my own publication, The World Affairs Brief. When I was in Israel, I talked to my sources there who told me this. And this is the story that's never been printed in even the alternative press in the United States. Of course, what has been printed is that there was a cover-up, that the Israelis did, in fact, intentionally attack the Liberty with all flags flying. And, you know, the part about the Israelis and the U.S. saying it was a case of mistaken identity was just a cover-up. And there was a massive cover-up of this. But here's the real story. That is, you know, this was happened, this attack on the Liberty, just as the Israelis were getting ready to mount their secret attack on the Golan Heights, which was manned by Russian observers with artillery. They were guiding a lot of the artillery and weapon systems that were going to be brought to bear, and so it was of utmost importance that Israel's attack on the Golan Heights be a secret. Israel intelligence got word from aerial reconnaissance that the USS Liberty, a spy ship, was steaming at full bore toward Israel in the Mediterranean in order to eavesdrop on this operation. The Israelis called Washington and said, turn your ship around. We do not want you eavesdropping on this operation. And the U.S. refused. The Israelis warned them again. And the reason I believe that the Israelis warned is they knew, what many of us have known, is that the U.S. had so many leaks in their system that this would get right back to the Russians, and the Russians would communicate with their people up there on the Golan, and the Israeli attack would not be a surprise. So it was because of all of the Soviet agents that the U.S. had allowed to infiltrate over the years that the Israelis were extremely concerned about this. And they warned the United States, pull off that ship. They refused, and that's why Israel attacked it. Anyway, that's what my sources in Israel told me was really going on.
Okay.
So, the mutual cover-up was, of course, because the U.S., you know, knew that they were the blame for sending in their spy ship, even when Israel had warned it away. And to save everybody's face all the way around, you know, they just covered it up.
Well, I know that, of course, there were actually a naval plane sent on two occasions to try to, of course, rescue the ship from the attack, and each time they were called back by President Johnson. So that is unconscionable. He left those men there to die.
That's right. They weren't about to attack Israeli aircraft, because, you know, Israel had the would of course told that it was the U.S. that refused to pull their ship up.
Hold that, we'll be right back in a moment.
United States in every single state. In any case, the Texas is even demanding that the FLDS Church pay for the raid, which illegally took away all their children. But this arrogant intervention was stopped in its tracks. The Texas Court of Appeals finally intervened. They ruled in favor, as I said, they said that Child Protective Services violated Texas law in their mass roundup of over 400 children. The court correctly zeroed in on the two major violations committed by these overzealous child protectors. One, treating the entire community as if it were one household. And two, failing to provide any specific evidence of individual abuse in the mass custody case, in which all children were ruled by virtue of being part of this religion to be at risk. Now, this is extremely dangerous legal doctrine, which I'm glad that the appeals court overturned. This idea that if you're part of a religion that the government disapproves of, that every child is at risk and therefore no person who's a member of that religion, or it could be political persuasion, it could be those that believe in conspiracy, those that are anti-government, as we talked about, that are on the red list, any of those could eventually be ruled to label you as a group and say that group is children is at risk and therefore no children can be under those families. So this is a major victory for the rights of parents everywhere to be free from the arbitrary edicts of government bureaucrats claiming the right to save children. No matter how much government may disapprove of a family's beliefs or their marriage arrangements, even as we disagree with them, Child Protective Services must have evidence of specific abuse by the parents in order to justify removing children from the home. The lawyer, which I saw in the press conference today, even said the state law requires that they must show that they have exhausted all of the alternatives before they put them into foster care. And there were no alternatives given these people. They simply took them. There was no program. There was no trial period. They simply took them all away. And as I said, they had ruled as of last week that you'll never get your children back unless you distance yourself from most parts of your religion. It is simply unacceptable in law to say that mere membership at a church or a political party or adherence to a belief in polygamy disqualifies parents from keeping the children. I mean, these same social sciences are lobbying the legislatures to allow homosexuals to adopt children. And yet we're taking them away from polygamous children who, unlike bigamy, at least they're taking care of their families. Now, in all this, I am not saying that those who have been accused of pressuring underage girls to marry them, yes, they should be thrown in prison, but you don't paint the whole group with the same brush, because since I've written of this on the World Affairs Brief, I've had several members from the FLDS people tell me that this is not common among most of the people, that this is just a few. And it is true that they have overused their authority to put pressure, and those people are known, and they should be prosecuted. But certainly all of the people should not be painted with the same brush.
And I think the interesting thing is, of course, there were a number of couples there that were monogamous. I mean, they were there, they believed in the sect, but there was one husband, one wife, and children, and of course their children were kidnapped as well. I mean, that is, and if this is an attack on a religion, what would happen if we did that to some Muslims? Why, there'd be an outcry. Think, of course, if they can do it to them, they can do it to the Christians of this country, the Catholics of this country, the Jews of this country. And I'm really so glad, of course, there is an outcry, and the courts, at least in this instance, have held correctly. But unfortunately, they haven't given the children back. I wonder why. We're going to be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joel, go right ahead here.
Well, there were also at least one family that was visiting there and had their children taken away. I mean, that shows how indiscriminate this was. The trial court, the same one that issued the search warrant against the ranch based on bogus information, now has 10 days in which to comply with this writ of mandamus. If they do not comply or appeal within 10 days, the writ of mandamus will be enforced by the appeals court, and all of the children must be returned. So this lady judge that they went shopping for, the prosecution in order, who's been very, very amenable to all of this, is getting overturned. The state may appeal to the Supreme Court, but the law is quite clear on this matter. So the chances, in my opinion, of getting this overturned are very slim. Unless, of course, the Supreme Court of Texas is inclined to twist the law, as did the original judge.
Somebody just called in and said the news just came out that they're reconsidering the returning of the children to the families in Texas. I don't know what that means. Anyway, go right ahead.
Well, obviously the trial court is going to have to reconsider because the court has mandated that.
Right.
The appeals court says your entire process has been ruled illegal, and so there's no basis to hold these children. So they've got to appeal or turn them back. Now, I might say this: the legal services there of Texas was only defending 48 mothers there. So this will not cover all of the children. It will not solve, but it will certainly provide a basis upon which other attorneys for other families will use to get the state overturned here. Now, so I'm moderately hopeful that this thing will be resolved. I think the FLDS Church has had such a scare that they better clean up their act because, you know, they know that they're on notice now, and hopefully the rest of the people who are not involved in what minor abuse has gone on there will put some pressure within their own leadership to make sure that this doesn't happen again, because they're full rights of liberty, and it taints all of our rights and liberty when the government can come in and use cults or any other type as an excuse to paint whole movements. And they might paint even the Mormon Church with the same brush, who doesn't practice polygamy anymore. They could paint Christians for any number of reasons. Those of us who believe in that the American government is responsible for a secret agenda, they could paint us with that same brush. Well, Dr. Sen, moving on to another topic, I mentioned several months ago about the case from the Electronic Freedom Foundation in a lawsuit against Homeland Security demanding to know upon what legal grounds the government could claim the right to search passengers boarding a flight. This is a warrantless search, by the way.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess this afternoon, it's Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And before we go on, we want, of course, Joel to tell our listeners how they could subscribe to his weekly publication. Now, I want you to know I read this, and of course, I go to their website every single day right after I do my emails. That's World Affairs Brief, and if you don't go there, well, you don't really know what's going on in the world, because there's so many stories that are totally blocked out by the controlled media, totally blocked out by television, and certainly in the newspapers. So, but you can go to World Affairs Brief, you'll get an overview of what's going on in the world, and it's a wonderful service. So, how can people subscribe to your publication?
Well, it tells them right on the website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com, written as one word, worldaffairsbrief.com. There's a big subscribe button where people can subscribe. But I allow people, I have a synopsis, by the way, of the current World Affairs Brief, the main story each week on the right up front and center on the website, and then you have a subscribe button where you can subscribe electronically. But I also allow people to email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief to get a free sample copy.
Is that worldaffairsbrief.com?
I'm sorry, yes. editor@worldaffairsbrief.com.
Right.
And you can request a sample copy of the World Affairs Brief. And if you email me tomorrow, you'll get a sample copy of what we're talking about today. If you email me today, you'll get a sample copy of the current brief for this past week, which focused on being labeled a domestic terrorist if you believe in the Constitution and defend the Bill of Rights, which got quite a play on the web. In any case, there's lots of free things on the World Affairs Brief website as well. You get all of the top stories from the news that are pre-screened by my volunteer research staff, so that you don't have to, you get the one that at least has the least propaganda in it. That's the best that we can do. That's the whole reason for my World Affairs Brief, is to fill in these major news stories with what's really going on. Lots of archival materials on the right-hand side of the World Affairs Brief. I concentrate on in-depth analysis of government cover-ups. And those are very interesting to read. On the left-hand column, you can access a lot of the books that I've written on how to prepare for what I feel may be a very sad ending to our fight for liberty here in this country. At least we need to be prepared for a takedown by government, even as we continue to fight for our liberty and help other people become educated.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly concur, but the one thing that may happen is the government may go bankrupt before it's able to impose a tyranny on the citizens, and we're having terrible financial situation, and as more people are incapable of paying their taxes, if the government simply prints the money, there will be rampant inflation, and then there will really be civil unrest in this country.
Well, you know, that the two things can't happen. Both of them, that is, you can't go bankrupt as long as you've got the power of the printing press. What you do, and what always happens with governments that have fiat money, is that the people pay a tremendous tax, an increased inflationary tax, that we become like the Weimar Republic. Now, because the U.S. dollar is an international currency, there's a huge pool of people that are absorbing U.S. dollars that have kept inflation relatively at bay at the United States and allowed our government to inflate at a rate higher than any other country in the world for decades, and we've been getting away with it because the U.S. has been the currency of trade around the world. But that, even with that advantage, inflation is really hitting home, well above 10 to 12% now. It's becoming very, very painful, and that's why the fuel prices are going up 10 cents a gallon almost every week, almost like clockwork. It's just unconscionable.
In fact, there was a fascinating Patrick Wood of August Review. I don't know whether you know him or not, but Patrick's a very, very astute observer. He emailed me today a link to a talk that was given by a man who works for the Council on Foreign Relations, as an advisor, one of the fellows there, who admitted, you know, the inflation, you know, you and I know exists, close to 12%, but even more than that, that the M3 figure was at least 17%, which reflects where we're going to be with inflation, you know, down the road, perhaps 6 months to 9 months. So, I mean, even the people within the establishment are recognizing the disastrous situation we're heading towards. Of course, his solution was to form a new gold currency privately issued, you know, that where of course people would accept because it was backed by gold. Isn't that interesting? Well, go right ahead.
The problem, of course, with putting together a gold currency is that bad money drives out good. People want to hoard the good currency and they want to spend the dollars. So it's very difficult for a good currency to get back into vogue in society because people basically, if it does have real value, they don't want to spend it when they can spend and get rid of dollars. It's a really catch-22 situation. There's almost no way around the plague of fiat money except to get the government to stop. And that's almost impossible to do because one of the real reasons why they don't tax and why they don't pass on these huge war costs is because it would be the quickest way for Americans to get very tired of this intervention of the world if they had to pay for it. That's why the deficit spending. It's just easier than raising taxes.
Well, that's how you get popular. I mean, you cut taxes, you increase spending, and then, of course, you wonder why the deficit is
going. Yeah. And the only way they've been able to get away with this is because the inflation has been absorbed by the world, and they've been able to spread the dollars around the world to keep inflation. If they'd done that, as Germany had done, we'd be the Weimar Republic. It would be wheelbarrows of money to go buy things. But we're getting to that point. I mean, it's getting scary. I mean, even at gas at $4 a gallon now, they're talking 10 or 12. They're telling us, you ought to feel lucky, you know. We'll be paying 10 or 12 by like the Europeans are. But, of course, the Europeans are paying about $6 a gallon for taxes in that, which is a whopping tax, but it has distorted the entire transportation system of Europe. Only the wealthy people can afford cars now. There used to be a few middle-class people, but even they couldn't afford to drive because the price of fuel was much higher than the price of a vehicle. And it was the price of fuel that keeps people from buying cars, and now it's stopping people from driving. A lot of people on this Memorial Day weekend are staying home. In fact, as I'm commenting on this week's World Affairs Brief, there's a tremendous amount of information now coming out about the real reason between high oil prices. It was, of course, interesting to watch the oil company's executives all lined up in a row, claiming why they're not at fault for this, having every excuse in the book, blaming China for absorbing all the energy resources. But in fact, what I'm reporting on today is that China's increase of energy resources is nowhere near enough to justify what's going on. In fact, gasoline stocks have been in oversupply. The U.S. Refiners have, in fact, been running their refineries less. They're down to about 80% utilization now instead of 95% when they were at the peak when this gas thing started up. So they're actually shutting down capacity in order to keep prices higher. They stopped importing gas, even though there were refineries around the world that have an excess of gasoline, and the reason for that is because diesel is the preferred fuel in Asia and in Europe now, and gasoline is going wanting. And here we are paying all these gas prices when it should be plummeting. But they're holding back, and they're having a problem because they're continuing to pump a lot of oil, their storage facilities are full, and at some point or another, they're not going to be able to hide this fact that they are suppressing output.
You know, when I saw the pictures of those oil company executives all sitting there saying it's not our fault, I mean, just because we made these massive profits, you don't think they were profiteering, do you? And I couldn't help but remember when they had the executives from the cigarette companies there, and they all stood up with their hand raised and swearing that they all believed that cigarettes were not addicting. There was no addiction from cigarettes. And you wonder, how could the senators tolerate that? You know they're lying. And they had to know they were lying yesterday, and yet, of course, they let them get away with it, and I can assure you that none of them will ever go to prison for perjury.
Well, that's right. You know, this is the key oil-consuming nation, the USA, and we're experiencing a significant drop in demand for gasoline now. China, which consumes only a third of the oil that the U.S. does, has seen a minor rise in import demand compared with the total daily output of some 84 million barrels, less than half of the total demand. You know what William Engdahl in the article concentrates on is the fact that almost 60% of today's price of $140 a barrel, it's just amazing, it keeps going up, is coming from unregulated future speculation by hedge funds, banks, and financial groups using the London futures market and the New York Times NYMEX futures exchange, and certain over-the-counter trading communities that avoid scrutiny. U.S. margin rules of the government's Commodity Futures Trading Commission allows these speculators to buy crude oil futures on contract at the NYMEX by having to pay only 6% of the value of the contract up front. To buy $8 a barrel contract for $128 a barrel, you're going to pay $8. To borrow the rest of the $120, and I think this secret plunge protection team is in on this, too. They're driving up the price, influencing option markets for using leveraging. And plus the fact, of course, there's this hoax of peak oil. The only peak oil that's being occurred is, in fact, the suppression of government oil, of oil fields that the government knows are ready to come online, but they're refusing to allow it to come online. There's a lot of oil fields, even in Saudi Arabia. There's one in Iraq, of course, that's being kept wrapped up. All of these things, if they came online, would increase production by another 2 to 3%. Combined with the rumors of what I talked about on the Gull Island oil field up there in Alaska that is big as anything in the Prudhoe Bay is being kept off the market, that's the real reason why we're having this supply problem. It's actually a manufactured shortage.
I agree with you totally, and I think it's about time the American people realize that. I really believe they want to drive these prices up. I believe they want to get us out of our cars. I believe they want to lower our living standards. That's why they've raised the price of electricity. That's why they're raising the prices of everything they possibly can. And sooner or later, it's going to have a profound and terrifying effect on the American people.
You know, this is one aspect of the economy that they can't simply inflate their way out of it. When you create an inflationary economy and you price people out of the marketplace is going to suffer. And already sales are going down in many, all of these companies are hustling to cut costs because consumers are not spending as much anymore. The inflation is taking a bite. Now, while it's true that over time people can find other sources of income and demand pay raises and things, at any given period of time, when you're siphoning off, $38 billion a month to the oil companies in excess profits, this is going to, that's coming right out of what people can spend on other products in the marketplace. And even though we can't determine what we're not buying, it certainly is happening.
Well, of course, the thing is, the price of heating oil is going up. The price of electricity is going up. I mean, the price of gasoline and food are going up, and more people are really beginning to hurt out there. And you know, they have a hard time paying for the oil that they used last winter, but they're not going to be able to use the electricity, you know. And they, as long as they keep driving the price up, they're not going to be able to have the air conditioning and the things that they need for a comfortable living. And I think life is going to become increasingly more difficult here in the United States as this planned program of rising and raising prices goes on. There's no reason for electricity to be as high as it is. And the only reason is because they blocked the alternative, you know, of the nuclear energy. They blocked, you know, certainly any effort to bring the prices down.
Well, you know, it's the natural gas prices have not risen significantly, nor have electric utility prices. They will, especially those that are generated with diesel fuel. But people who have home heating oil are looking at nearly a 200% increase in cost. That means for some people it's costing them $3,000 a season to heat their house, where it used to cost less than $1,000. For people heating with propane, there's millions of cabins in the United States and people in rural areas that don't have access to natural gas. And, you know, costs of propane are up to nearly at $3 a gallon. And it used to be 80 cents. That means people are paying for a 1,000-gallon tank. They're paying almost $3,000 to fill that tank. And that doesn't even last them the heating season. It's just pricing people out. I mean, how do you heat your home?
With great difficulty, I will tell you, with great difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, their only other alternative is wood stoves and things.
But, of course, they don't want us to use wood stoves, and they're talking about, you know, banning the burning of wood because, after all, it's polluting the environment.
Well, you know, diesel fuel used to be cheaper than gas. Remember those times when diesel was always about 20% lower than gas? Not anymore. Part of the increased cost is due to the excessive requirement to remove almost all sulfur from the fuel. But, in fact, there's a huge trend in Europe and Asia to go to diesel-only cars. 70% of the cars in Europe are diesels now, 70%. So there's a tremendous demand for diesel fuel, and gasoline is getting less and less use, as we talked about. And in addition to that, we are actually exporting diesel fuel to Chile in this country. That's the lion's share of our diesel fuel goes to Chile. They're having problems producing electricity, and they have diesel generators, fuel oil generators that generate electricity. So that while our prices are going up and things, and we're having to import diesel because our refiners are exporting it.
And, of course, it's just like that oil that comes down out of Prudhoe Bay. My understanding is put on tankers and sent to Japan. Instead of being here, you know, they're telling about all the shortages of oil. We don't have any oil. And the oil we're actually producing in Alaska is going to Japan. There's something wrong with this whole picture. One of these days, maybe the American people will wake up. Maybe when oil hits $10 or $12 a gallon.
Well, you know, part of the problem is the Alaska pipeline. They need another pipeline for natural gas. ConocoPhillips signed a 15-year agreement with China or with Japan to sell them all their natural gas coming in. There's just huge supplies of natural gas up there. And they convert it at great expense to liquefied natural gas, ship it to Japan because nobody wanted it in the States. Part of the problem was Alaska wanted an outrageous percentage to allow this pipeline. The state of Alaska, you know, wants to milk the pipeline to keep their taxes low. And they wanted an outrageous percentage, and so it killed the deal. So the state government was in part responsible for not having a natural gas pipeline coming down from Alaska to Canada to get that gas to the states. And the same thing with the oil. You have to own a portion of that pipeline in order to get part of it to ship your oil. You know, it's just like one tube, 4 feet around, and you got to take your turns, the various companies up there pumping oil down the tube, and you've got to own part of it to get you know, a percentage of the flow.
Well,
the environmentalists are keeping those things wrapped up as well, but the government did order the Gulf Island oil field capped, and we need to demand that they stop doing that.
Amen to that. Well, our guest this afternoon has been Joel Skousen. He's talking about how the government ordered the Gulf Island oil field count. If you don't know about it, right, we carried Lindsay Williams' book. I've actually talked to a man who worked on the pipeline with Lindsay Williams, who verified this story. And the book is the Energy Non-Crisis. The Energy Non-Crisis. Remember that next time you go to the gas station and fill up your tank with $4 a gallon gasoline. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joel, you've got 3 minutes to wrap the program up.
Well, it's interesting. John McCain is at it again. Republicans are reeling from, and very fearful, frankly, of a rout in November. You know, can you imagine all of the free publicity that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton get every single day? I have not seen a newscast in the past 6 months where every day those two have been on. And the most benign, you know, showing smiling, cheering faces every day. You know, that's either going to have a very positive effect on the Democrats or a negative one. You know, nobody knows. They never had this kind of coverage before. And people could be so sick of seeing Obama or Hillary that they could say, I'm not voting for them. But it could be that McCain is going to get, clobbered on this. Obviously, he has all the baggage of the Bush administration. He's busy positioning himself now to try to soften his statements that have antagonized conservatives, just like telecom immunity. He's now saying that he's against telecom immunity, even though he voted for it in the Senate. Yeah, but his version now of this immunity is pretty silly. He said, if we hold hearings on this, and if the telecoms apologize to the American people, then we'll give them immunity. Now, doesn't that make you feel better? They're all sorry for violating the law. Now we're to let them off scot-free. When in fact, they're not going to stop. They're still spying on us right now as we speak.
I have no question you're right. I'm sure that they do monitor us. In fact, I had actual proof that they were monitoring my faxes many years ago. But you don't worry about it, because I don't believe I'm doing anything dishonest. I've given my life to save this country, and it's those people on the other side who are the true traitors to our Constitution.
Indeed, they are. Well, you know, this is the John McCain who is easy to play games with words. He claimed to be anti-torture and sponsored the bill against torture. And then, of course, he's the one who talked the nation into accepting his compromise with the president, wherein the fine print said, no torture except when the president authorizes it through secrecy. It's a hole as wide as you can drive a truck through, and McCain is responsible for championing that. They're using him. I mean, and he's a knowing conspirator in this thing. So I think conservatives ought to make sure they vote a strong third-party candidate this year instead of the two major parties.
Well, I think it's going to be a fascinating time between now and November, especially if the Bush administration does expand the war in the Middle East, which at least many people think they're going to, as a vehicle of getting John McCain in. Well, we're out of time, Joel. I want to thank you so very much for being with us, and of course we're going to look forward to having you again next week at the same time.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless.
Bye now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoy our interviews with Joel Skousen. I always do. I think he's one of the most fascinating people we have here on the program. We have several regular guests, and one of them is William Grigg, one of them Barry Samus, one of them is Joel Skousen. We just try to have them on every week. They all approach things from a different point of view, but their information, I think, is invaluable. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're in a terrible bind today. Most people really don't understand what's happening as far as the oil crisis is concerned. And let me suggest, if you have not yet read Lindsay Williams' book, The Energy Non-Crisis, we just ordered 50 of them. They're going out so rapidly. It's an inexpensive book, but well done, well written, and I believe it's very valid, because I personally checked with somebody else who worked there at the same time as Lindsay did, who verified Lindsay's story and said, you know, I've never... And this is what he told me. I've never understood why they kept that massive field at Gull Island and have never actually developed it. Well, of course, then we carry another four-tape or four-CD set. It's called The Oil Deception. the oil deception. We think it's important for you to understand that most of what you've been told about the shortage of oil are simply fraudulent. If you want to know why your electricity bill has gone up considerably, you need to get our 4-tape set or our video on the electricity crisis, and the syllabus goes with that, because of course we went into that in great detail, and we had a number of newsletters we wrote about it, and it was all a scam. They told the American people that they were going to lower electricity prices by, of course, deregulating electricity and bringing the free market in. And, of course, after they got done, why, we'd almost tripled the cost of electricity. They knew exactly what they were doing, because every other place that had been tried in the world, that's exactly what had happened, but they couldn't let the American people know. This was all part of the plan of raising the price of the essentials of life so they could lower our living standards. If you doubt that there is a plan, a master plan, why, Chris, you need to get the Earth Charter. You can get it on the Internet, or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And ask for the Earth Charter and read point 10A. This is actually written by Stephen Rockefeller, the Rockefeller family, the most wealthy family in our nation by far, dwarfing, of course, the holdings of Warren Buffett and Bill Gates. But you probably believe they're the richest two men in America. Well, that's because you've been listening to Rush Limbaugh for too long. And you've been reading the papers and believing what you read. The Rockefeller family's wealth dwarfs, I mean, the holdings of Warren Buffett and, of course, of Bill Gates. But Stephen Rockefeller, of course, along with Murray Strong, a multi-billionaire, tied into the Rockefellers, and, of course, Mikhail Gorbachev, actually wrote the Earth Charter. It's the new Ten Commandments. It's being held in the Ark of Hope, a Luciferian counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. And everything, of course, is simply a 180 degrees reversal of everything that says in the Holy Scriptures. Point 10A of the new Ten Commandments, the Earth Charter, says they want equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. That means they're going to send your wealth to people living in third world countries, and in so doing, lower your living standards. The same thing is covered in the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which we have a summary of in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. So you need to get my talk on sustainable development, the road to world government. You need to get our 4-tape set on sustainable development, and you need to get our syllabus, because it's one of the best syllabuses we've ever put together, and we'll take you into the plan for population control and, of course, the elimination of the vast majority of people in the world. Why would anybody want to do that? Because they come from a different worldview. They think there are too many people, and that we are using up their natural resources. You need to hear my talk. It's available on DVD. None dare call it genocide. You need to hear my talk on the planned population reduction. And if you get either one of those or anything we've talked about today and ask for it, we'll send you free of charge my population control agenda monograph. That's a population control agenda monograph. And understand, ladies and gentlemen, that we are really involved in a spiritual battle, because behind the people on the other side are powerful spiritual forces that are directing their actions. So pray for America, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.